1320 WILS. I'm Michael Cohen. Big news when it comes to virtual reality. In fact, Samsung introducing what's called Gear 360. It's a camera that records in virtual reality videos. This is at their Mobile World Congress. Among those there was Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who views virtual reality as it's going to be basically the most social platform that we'll ever experience. My next guest is a pioneer in virtual reality. Jim Oblaskovich is the director of the Research Center for Virtual Environments at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Jim, great to have you here.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is quite... Go ahead.
Is this live?
We are live, yep, and it's great to have you here in Lansing. I'm guessing you guys have some good weather down there in Santa Barbara.
Oh, you don't want to know.
Yeah, we're about to get hit with a big snowstorm tomorrow morning. But first of all, Jim, what's your background in virtual reality? How far back does it go?
20 years.
20 years, you said?
Yeah, 20 years. When I arrived at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and met my colleague, Jack Loomis, who was way ahead of his time, along with a graduate student and postdoctoral fellow of his by the name of Andrew Beal. And they were developing head-mounted displays and tracking systems and all sorts of stuff, and I got a little demo. Uh-huh. I was so impressed with the demo that I decided, well, I should jump in because this would affect people, and imagine what a social psychologist could do with this virtual reality stuff. So for the last 20 years, we've been doing a lot of research. We've developed a theoretical model of social influence in virtual worlds. We wrote a trade book called Infinite Reality, and things are just getting bigger and more widespread.
Yeah, the book, again, is Infinite Reality, the Hidden Blueprint of Our Virtual Lives. Where are we right now, Jim? I mean, I know there's some all kinds of gadgets you can use. How developed, how realistic are they now?
Well, I think you have to stop and answer the question, what's real? And the closest we can come to it philosophically is nothing. So there's not much difference between physical reality or what we call grounded reality and virtual reality. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, two sides of the same coin. As humans, we can dream, we daydream, our minds wander some 2,000 times a day. The history of technology goes back to storytelling.
Yeah.
And then, like cave painting, art, theater, manuscripts, the print press was a paradigm shift, allowing people to share virtual worlds via the printed page.
Right. And then, of course, it's going to be real. We're going to be. But here's my question, because I've never put any of these goggles on. What are they like now? When you put them on, how immersed are you?
Pretty immersed. Of course, it depends on what you're being immersed in. But pretty immersed. And I think we've gotten by almost all of the technological hurdles to that happening.
And what have you used them like? What kinds of experiences have you had with these virtual reality things?
Well, we've used it to create all sorts of worlds, to study all sorts of social influence processes, to develop all sorts of applications, et cetera. You name a discipline and you can probably find a VR experience that's relevant to that particular discipline. So we predicted about 10 years ago, I think it's about 10, maybe longer, maybe 13 years ago, that it would really hit the market. It would really get big when tracking systems for the home that is tracking a person's movements got cheap. And the Wii Wand was kind of an advance in that area. But then when the Microsoft Kinect came out, it was lights out. We knew right then that the cost of head-mounted displays would decrease by a couple orders of magnitude. And that's exactly what happened. So when Oculus,
and right, because Facebook bought Oculus for $2 billion, right? Now, how much of a leader is Facebook going to be then in moving forward in virtual reality?
In terms of money, I think
pulling us into it, in terms of people actually getting more interested in VR.
You ever watch television?
I probably too much. Yeah,
that's what's going to happen.
We're all going to be consumed by it, you're saying.
In some way or another. Not consumed, but some people will be consumed. Some people have been addicted to it, especially via the game environment for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it's just the next, latest, greatest thing in VR. A simple example I like to give is a phone, or actually our phone, our conversation right now. We're not listening to each other directly. We're listening to each other via an audio avatar. an online representation of our voice that's been digitized, sent over the satellites to each other, and you can from your place to your wonderful radio audience, etc. People never stop to think that they're not actually talking to the person directly, but via an audio avatar. So in the visual space, it's the same thing, right? We're going to get very used to talking to people's avatars. The interesting thing is, just like we can get robocard calls now on the phone that tend to make us think it's an actual person for just a little bit of time,
right,
that's going to start via VR, via the headset. Nothing new for humans, just the technology gets better, and who knows what's happening.
Jim Blazkowicz is the director of the Research Center for Virtual Environments at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I mean, right at this point, people are FaceTiming and they're Skyping, right, so they can talk and look at each other. Just how much of a step forward is doing that in virtual reality going to be then?
Well, it depends on the application. So, for example, if you were going to try on clothes, and if you were going to put on an outfit and say, I like this, and all of a sudden, all your measurements achieved and sent to a factory, which would instantly make your outfit exactly your size. That's just a commercial example. So entertainment examples abound, from being in games, which have been with humans as long as anybody can remember, vis-a-vis industry, medicine, you name the field, there are people working on VR applications that are important for all of those.
Okay, so it's going to have all, and how potentially addictive is it, would you say?
Well, I think it's, almost any kind of device that gives people some kind of gratification can be addictive. And I think given that it incorporates both sound and vision and in some cases touch and some of the other senses, even smell, it can become really, really addictive because people can kind of escape their physical realities, let us say, the realities in their grounded environments and go someplace a whole lot nicer if they want.
Now, have you ever felt in using virtual reality equipment, have you ever in any way almost forgotten you were in a VR?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sense of immersion can happen pretty easily. It depends on your interest in whatever the activity or whatever the environment is that you're in.
Can you give me some examples of the environments you were in yourself?
Well, yeah, being in an aquarium and swimming in it. Just by the movement of your hands being tracked, if you stick them out, for example, you can be swimming in the Great Barrier Reef, or you can play Superman and fly through Manhattan. There's a lot of things you can do in that regard. You could actually play Quidditch, I think, in VR. I don't know if anybody's that app.
Without having to be too strenuous about it, that is appealing. Yeah. Also, now this Gear 360 that Samsung introduced, this camera to record virtual reality videos, is this some kind of a breakthrough or?
Well, I think there's a lot of competition for it. There's many without mentioning names.
Because it records on both, like 360, right? It has a front camera and a back camera, I think, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it can do that. However, I don't know how much it's going to add just to the regular, like, 60-degree field of view experience where you can turn your head or you can turn your body all around, et cetera. I mean, one of the interesting things about wide-angle VR devices is you also have to track the eyes a little bit. If you only have about 60 degrees, people don't move their eyes, they move their head. It's like wearing binoculars. Nobody ever wears binoculars and moves their eyes. They move their head, as I'm sure you would agree. Well, if you have a field of view in a head-mounted display that's not 360, you don't even think about moving your eyes. You just move your head. It comes quite naturally. So there's some issues with the 360. Now, it just depends on the field of view that's being actually displayed to the individual. But maybe I'm getting a little too technical.
But one last thing, Jim, because I have not, as I said, used this equipment. I mean, you said we're close to it, but is this a year or two or three where there's going to be this explosion of use of this equipment?
Oh, I think it's happening now.
It is? Yeah, is it really?
yeah, I think it's, I mean, if you think about some of the applications in medicine where you can put a person in the virtual world, you know, who's been a victim of, in the physical world, who's been a victim of a burn, you know, third-degree burn. Now, there's studies that show you put them in a virtual world while skin's being ablated and scraped away. This is one of the most painful procedures we know of. Their pain threshold, their pain just goes away. I mean, not completely, but it goes away up to 80%. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been neurosurgeons using virtual reality for a long time where they can create a virtual rendition of a tumor in somebody's brain and then shoot it with the appropriate degrees of radiation, only the tumor, and kill the DNA in the tumor. So there's a lot of these things.
A lot of things
those
that,
wouldn't be wearing a mounted display, but they'd still be using virtual reality.
One last thing, the Facebook applications, then obviously they bought this company, Oculus, to develop things with them. What? How do you see it being used socially? What's going to be the use there?
Well, you know, first of all, you think about the company that bought it, and I think it was a brilliant move that they bought it. You know, 3D Facebook, for example.
So you'll be sitting in a room with people, that kind of thing?
Sure. All sorts of things like that. Just the ability to take yourself, you know, away from your physical environment. We do it all the time. As I think I said earlier, people's minds wander 2,000 times a day during
daydreaming. But this will be like a much more...
That's 125 times a minute. So in a 10-minute phone call, you and I are doing it 30, 40 times.
I think I need to avoid this because I think once I get immersed, I may not come back out. Jim Blass, what's that?
Yeah, I agree with you.
No, it sounds very, very tempting and enjoyable, too. Jim Blaskovich, director of the Research Center for Virtual Environments at the University of California, Santa Barbara. The book, Infinite Reality, the Hidden Blueprint of Our Virtual Lives. Jim, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.